This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 27. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliff, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway. Welcome to the show, Garraz. Where are you located at the moment?
I'm at Tunbridge School on the Martins pitch, which is the smaller of the two pitches, and we're playing against a school side from Perth as part of the Tunbridge School Festival.
Wow, blimey, they've come a long way for a game of cricket.
They certainly have. They're in their last couple of days of a tour, fly back tomorrow, so they've got an earlier start than the rest of us tomorrow. And, and then they're going to be getting to the airport and off they go.
Well, that's a great experience, though, isn't it, for both sides, really, to experience different conditions and different types of players?
Definitely. I mean, and it's a really good festival, actually. And there's also, we played against a South African side that came from Mpumalanga yesterday, up on the borders of Natal. So it was a good experience for them, and although they were on the end of a bit of a hiding, I think they probably benefited from playing against some good players on some very flat wickets, it has to be said.
Well, character building, as they say.
Correct.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about something which is close to my own heart this week, Garraz, and I wanted to get your take on things, and that is planning. It's all to do with planning, and particularly from the point of view of a coach, but you can also take it from the point of view of a player. Planning is something which is tends to be, when you're taught how to do it, it's fill in a piece of paper ahead of time, work out what your objectives are, fill in the sheet of paper, and then stick to that once you've done it. But then what happens in the real life is, certainly with a lot of coaches, is that the planning doesn't quite become that regimented, and the coach ends up on the drive to the ground deciding what they're going to do for the week. So where do you stand when it comes to planning out sessions, planning out what you're going to do over a phase of the year, whether it's a summer or a winter?
Yeah, I mean, planning is an interesting one. I think there's some individual takes on it, but ultimately everybody needs a starting point, don't they, and a plan. And if you talk to any commanders that take their troops into battle, they say that the plan lasts as long as until you get into the sort of first contact with the opposition, really. And then it's all about having options and routines that you can go to maximise the situation and to adapt to the circumstances that are around you. And I think that's the same in any coaching session, because we all go into them with really good intentions of this, that and the other. And I think it's really important to have a theme that you're going to work on over the course of the session. But ultimately, the players often take you where you're going to go, because they'll adapt really well to something, or they need a bit of teasing in one area to get their mindsets right so they can attack the theme that you've put in place. And I think you have to have a starting point. That's absolutely essential.
Now, the experience of the coach also comes into it, doesn't it? Because if you're an inexperienced coach, maybe you want to plan in a little bit more detail than if you are somebody who has a lot of things that they can work off instinctively, and they can see a pattern to something and quickly change things.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why within any coach education program, that the planning elements of coach ed will happen at the level one and level two in the ECB's version, to get people on board with the idea of planning. And then obviously, as you get more experience, as you say, you're able to adapt and use your previous experience to fill in some of the gaps. And that's certainly the way that I operate, and I accept that people are different, and you and I are very different in the way that we, the level of detail that we'll plan with. But ultimately, the more experience you get, the less it probably is a pen and paper exercise, and more you've got it in your head, and you've got a good idea where you're going to go, but also be adaptable as and when things change, because that's the nature of cricket and that's the nature of people.
And how much involvement do you recommend that you give to players in that process, consciously planning rather than being guided by the player and you leading the way, if you see what I mean?
Well, yeah, again, you know, that varies, and it varies on their maturity, their understanding a little bit. And also it might be a case that you want to increase their level of maturity and their level of understanding by giving them some responsibility in it. And I've done that with some quite junior groups, and it's paid real dividends because they start to buy into what you're doing because they're involved in it. And I think that's a really good exercise for a young group of players. Is to say to them, right, you know, we're going to do some batting today. We might be focusing on spin. Now you tell me, which areas do you want to go away from a session being better at? What would be a real achievement for you guys? You know, and it might be that a couple of guys want to focus on sweeps and their passion to get better at the sweep then guides the other people through as well. So I think it's really important that you open it up. And do open it up, then obviously we've got to be ready to put things back on track if we do get some answers that aren't in the right direction or are completely off a wall. We've then got to go, you know, fantastic, great idea. However, when you look at the top players do it, or when you look at the way that we've played it over the last bit of time, actually that's not relevant. And I think trying to keep things on track whilst giving people involvement in the planning process is a real delicate balance, and over the years you get better at it.
And there's kind of a subcategory to planning as well, which is the player who hasn't necessarily got access to a coach, or the player who feels like he's not getting from the coach what he wants. Those are very common things that we hear about from players all over the world. They haven't got any coaching at all, or they feel like the coach is not doing the things that the player thinks is best for them. What kind of planning can a player do if they're in that kind of situation?
Well, heaps, actually, because you find that even at the top level, the best players and the people who get the most out of practice are often the ones that actually plan it themselves, and then use the support staff around them, the coaches around them, to be able to add value to their own plan. So again, going back to a time where I was with a Peterson or a Vaughan or a Collingwood, they would very much know what they wanted to get out of a session, what areas they wanted to attack, what areas they wanted to develop in, and they would almost instruct me about the theme. And then I would be their eyes and ears and offer my opinions or some video footage to support their development through that theme that they've come up with. So I think it's crucial. And you've only got to listen to the likes of Raul Dravid when he talks about his practice methodology, you know, of making things real, of putting yourself into those match situations when you're in nets, to know that that's not necessarily come from coaches that have been around him, but actually been driven by his own desire to make his practice as functional and as relevant as possible.
Okay, so let's wrap up with this section with the yes-no round. Every week, three questions, only two options, yes or no. And as Berners is away, I will be reading the questions this week, so Gareth, if you can answer first. Here's the first question. The women's Ashes point system has a future in men's cricket.
No.
Second question, England will win the Ashes.
Yes.
Third question, there's no place for the non-spinning spinner in cricket.
No.
Big debate on that one this week on the site. Somebody getting very upset somebody said anyone who doesn't give it as much of a rip as they can should be banned from cricket. That was the
convinced by that.
Yeah, but of course that was the extreme, and then the other extreme view came back saying, well, hang on, I played club cricket for 15 years, I don't turn it, but I do quite well, thanks very much.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got a place. You don't want to turn people away from our sport, that is for sure.
Now we're going to step away from the panel for a moment and have a chat with our special guest in the interview section this week. And I'd like to welcome Matthew Dawson onto the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thanks, David.
Now, Matthew, you're running things at the Cricket Asylum. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do there for anyone who is uninitiated?
Yeah, basically we've got the four-lane indoor centre up in West Yorkshire. All four lanes fully fitted with pitch vision technology. My role is to sort of run it as a coaching venue. We've got our academy. We do coaching in schools. We all that kind of thing. A lot of one-to-ones and sort of putting the technology to use in developing all the local players.
Fantastic. So obviously what you're doing there is working, and it's making a difference to these young cricketers. But not everybody can afford to stump up the money to pay for such a thing. So you've come up with an innovative idea to try and work out how to get some youngsters in who perhaps haven't got as much money as others, but have a little bit of talent and want to try and get a scholarship.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, obviously it's fantastic doing the job that I do, but it's hard sometimes when you see talented kids and they're keen, they want to do it, the hard work's there, but obviously the finance doesn't allow them to get on, which is a shame. So what we've come up with is a cricket foundation whereby we're going to invite local businesses, big businesses as well, to sort of partner up with our foundation to provide backing for scholarships to come on the Elite Academy.
Well, it's marvellous that a private organisation who, I mean, obviously the company is there to make money, otherwise it wouldn't exist. But it's really, really good that you can take time to think to yourself, okay, how can we spread things wider? How can we focus on people who don't necessarily be able to afford that? And I think that's a marvellous thing for an organisation to be doing. What's the next step for you in developing the charitable side of things?
We're in the process now of approaching businesses that we think might be keen on partnering with us. We've put together a phase one whereby if we get to a certain amount of money raised, we can deliver the phase one, which includes three scholarships onto the academy, as we've discussed. But it's also going to include five primary schools getting 10 weeks of cricket coaching within their school. So what we'd do there, maybe using cricket clubs that are low on junior numbers, we would sort of target the primary schools in their area in the hope to get more kids into the sport long term.
It's a fantastic idea, and I wholeheartedly support it. If anyone is listening, either a young player who is keen on doing that kind of thing, or somebody who is involved in business and wants to find out more about the charitable contribution that they can make to the foundation, what would people need to do to get in touch with you?
Well, they can get in touch with us direct, and we can send them the full details of what the foundation aims to achieve, and also what the sort of businesses can get out of it. We are trying to put a package together where they're not just giving us our money, they get exposure as well. There'll be press releases. We've got a big customer base that the businesses can exploit as well. So we want it to be a two-way thing. But yeah, just a case of getting in touch with us, we could open up a discussion if people wanted to get involved.
And the website address for anyone who wants to do that?
www.thecricketasylum.co.uk.
Well, Matthew Dawson, thanks very much for coming on the show this week. Good luck in your venture, and I know we'll continue to work closely together with you, such a big supporter of Pitch Vision.
Yeah, many thanks, David. Thanks for your time.
Okay, interesting interview there from the Cricket Asylum, and we are moving into our mailbag section. I'm in charge of the questions this week, so Gareth, if you can tell me what you think, and then we can have a bit of a discussion about each one. The first question this week is from Regan, and Regan says, I was just wondering if you could give me some advice on how to eliminate a big vertical jump in my bowling stride. Instead of jumping forwards, I seem to jump too high and lose all my momentum from the run-up. So I was wondering if you have any tips to fix this problem. So he jumps up, not forwards. What do we think?
Well, somebody who knows a lot more about fast bowling than me is a guy called Stuart Barnes, who's now at Surrey and working with the likes of Tremlett and Jay Dernbach and Stuart Meeker. Mm. And I learned this off of him, so I'm not claiming this for myself, but one of the best things that you can do if you're jumping up too high is run in faster, because by running in faster, you'll find that you go forward rather than going up. And it's a little bit like a long jumper who uses gets all of their pace going and maintains their pace into their launch off of the board, If they maintain their pace, then often they get their distance through their momentum as opposed to any upward movement, whereas some long jumpers run in at pace and then slightly decelerate to set themselves for that launch where they jump a bit higher. So his basic bit of advice to stop people from jumping too high and then losing their momentum in into their delivery stride is to run up faster. So I think that's a really good basic one, which you can which you can go with straight away, and the simple things normally work. The second one is to have a look at where your bowling hand is as you get into your bound stride. So often bowlers have their bowling hand going backwards and often behind their head as they hit their last stride going into their bound. And when that happens, naturally, all the weight goes backwards, and as a result, the jump is exaggerated and you get too high. And if you get too high, obviously you come down too steep, your legs collapse underneath you often, and you lose all the momentum that you gained in your run-up. So have a look at where your bowling hand is. If you can get your bowling hand out in front of you a little bit, then you'll find that you'll go forward in that bound and in that delivery stride, and all your momentum will go towards the target.
Now, I've never come across this particular problem that's been bad enough to do something about it. Where do you draw the line, Gareth, where you think, well, hang on a minute, this guy's momentum is going up instead of forwards?
I would say it's what happens next. So if you have a look at back foot contact with the ground and what the back knee does, often it will collapse. If you're coming down from too steep a height, i.e. you've jumped too high, then it's very difficult to absorb the ground forces effectively, and you'll see the back leg collapse. And what we know about back legs collapsing is that it often leads to the front side being thrown out towards the edge of a crease, and that's how back injuries start to occur. So, yeah, the first thing and the most crucial thing is that we limit that bound stride. So it is hugely important, because not just because you're jumping too high, but what it leads on to at that key point, which is when you release the ball, when between 6 to 8 and sometimes 10 times your body weight is going through your skeleton at point of release.
One drill that I've heard for that kind of problem as well is to have something to jump over. Whether that's an actual physical thing is... You don't want somebody tripping over, so maybe it's a line of cones or something. Have you tried that?
Yeah, I have, but that's not been for that particular thing, because if you put something to jump over, often that leads people to jump high, therefore increasing the vertical jump, which is what we're trying to eliminate. Well, not eliminate, but we're trying to reduce here. So I wouldn't use that particularly for that circumstance that we're talking about here. To me, it's about increasing your running speed, experimenting with that. Hopefully that works. If that doesn't work, then have a look at where your bowling hand is at the time where you hit your bound stride, going into your delivery stride. And if your bound is too high, it's often because your bowling hand is behind your head or going backwards as you hit that jump point.
And it is one of those things where you do need to put the run-up in, because if you do it from a standing start, it would be a different kind of feeling.
It would do, but you can also build it up from a standing start. And obviously, it's a very manageable chunk. So you might start from a two-pace walk into your bound strike to see if you can reduce it. And then obviously, you work it back with having a bit more distance coming into your bound strike, having a bit more pace coming in. And normally, when you put momentum into something, if it's going to break down again. So it is a longish process, but it's one that works really, really well. And we've had a lot of success with a couple of our young players at school this year who have gone from being people that have jumped incredibly high and as a result have collapsed on their back leg and then had potential back injuries to being people that are now carrying themselves through the crease really, really nicely. And as a result, are more healthy and hopefully more effective.
Do you find you can use verbal cues with people who don't necessarily need to get out of a bad habit so much as, you're grooving something in more quickly? Can you use a verbal cue like the Ian Pont idea of saying, think about hang time and that kind of, there'll be different cues for different people, obviously, but do you have verbal cues that you can say to someone, try it this way and it clicks with them?
Yeah, absolutely right. So, you know, we've talked about different types of people before, haven't we, a lot on this show. And if somebody is somebody who, if somebody's working and they throw their arms away from them, so I'm trying to think about somebody like a Harmison, then you would talk about their hands, for example, because often where their hands go, the rest of the body goes. Whereas somebody who, more like a Jason Gillespie, who kept his arms nice and close into his body when he bowled, you'd probably talk to him about his tummy button and his core going towards the batter. And by doing that, that would flatten out their vertical jump. So you watch what they do, you listen to how they talk, and then you apply your language accordingly. I would not say that there was one verbal cue that would work for everybody, because I think that's far too simplistic. But yeah, just by watching what people do and listening to how they talk, I think you can apply your verbal cue really well to support the things that you're trying to ask them to do.
Fantastic. Now, have you got time for the second question? Because that must be your plane arriving.
No, it's not. That's I think Dad's just doing a couple of bypasses, mate.
Well, that's fine. Okay, well, let's move on to the second question. An intriguing one this week, and it's from Raman. And Raman says, I've reconnected with cricket after almost 21 years, thanks to my 7-year-old son, who is enjoying playing cricket, which is fabulous news for everybody involved. And whilst practicing with him, I suddenly realised that even though I'm right-handed and have always batted right-handed, playing with my left hand for fun turned out to be more effective, powerful and flexible. I particularly like playing leg side, which is not my naturally comfortable part of my game when playing right-handed. So the question is this experience out of the norm, and is it worth persevering with left-handed batting? What do you think, Gareth?
Well, first thing I'd say is I'd persevere with it just as an experiment, and I love experimenting and I like finding out. So I'd say give it a go, Raman. I mean, that sounds fantastic, and what an experience to have after not being connected with the game for 21 years. And well done to your 7-year-old son for A, being interested in the game, and B, being passionate enough that you've gone back into it yourself. So, I mean, a simple thing I'd say is just give it a go. An experiment, find out which one works better. And if it means that you start playing again and you start having a bit of fun pongoing it around the ground left-handed, then fantastic by me. So I'm not going to give you anything more than that. Some people are more prone to being ambidextrous than others. Again, you know, you just got to experiment. So a bit like the Owen Morgans of this world, you know, they can turn around and hit the ball, the Kevin Petersons of this world. If those guys didn't experiment with what they do, then they'd never find out, and you're in exactly the same boat. So you could become the next KP, Raman, which would be very exciting after such a long layoff.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't really got anything to lose, have you, Raman? It's fantastic. And it's not like you'd be the first person to ever do it, as you said. KP has had a little go at batting left-handed, albeit temporarily. I think Mike Hussey started out as a right-hander, didn't he? And he changed his mind. One of our players in our team can bat left and right-handed. And he is right-handed, and he naturally bats right-handed. But he's taught himself to bat left-handed, and he bats left-handed all the time now. But you should see him play a switch hit. Because it's just like a pull shot for him.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, those are a couple of examples. Not everyone can do it, but why not? It's fantastic to experiment with. And what could be more fun than batting right-handed till you get to 20 and then swapping round? What confusion that would cause. Calling for a new pair of gloves, left-handed ones.
Getting to 20 sounds ambitious, mate, to be honest with you. So,
oh, really?
It does at the moment. But, no, fantastic. Have a bit of fun with the game, Raman. And after 21 years, you deserve to, mate.
Well, let's not get dragged any further into Gareth's personal nightmares. Let's head over to the Pitch Vision newsroom, where Daisy Cutter is waiting with this week's headlines.
Thank you, David. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter, and this is the Pitch Vision News. Controversy continues to dog Pitch Vision's Manu Gazandam. The Grizzly Spin Bowling Gurus article, dealing with multiple flaws, has been slammed by some readers in a rollers versus rippers debate. One poster delivered the ultimate spinning insult that had a site moderator reduced to tears. You can read the angry exchange on the site, link in the show notes. Time to throw away your dartfish, time to throw away your silicon coach. Released on all Pitch Vision systems today, Pitch Vision is now the only video analysis system in the world that allows an audio memo to be added to the video and ball tracking information. No other analyst software provides this feature. Pitch Vision's marketing director, Neil Furbone, says that Pitch Vision software is now so far in front of our competitors that it's not funny. Former Aussie paceman and Pitch Vision ambassador, Craig McDermott, has uncovered a gem in the search for the next Aussie speedster. 15-year-old Wesley clocked up an average of 132.97 km/h at the Pace Bowling Australia camp at Brisbane in May. According to Pitch Vision stats, this is 44.79 km/h above the average pace of 15-year-old Seamers. Watch out for this lad appearing in the baggy green one day, assuming he doesn't get injured first. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
Thank you, Daisy, and exciting news, Gareth, about the Aussie boy who is getting the speed gun right up there, thanks to Pitch Vision.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, that's a good lick, that. Anything over 140 is strong, and he's 15, and it won't be long before he's breaking 140 and probably going beyond it. So watch this space. It's soapbox time. We've got David this week. I've been ranting for a couple of weeks. It's now his turn. So over to you, boss.
Well, I read an article this week regarding training zone and the return of the aerobic training zone into vogue in the fitness world, because it's been a little bit out of fashion. What with high intensity training being talked about and getting the heart rate up really high above outside of that old fashioned training zone, but the truth is still the same, that if you can keep your heart rate within a certain training zone, then it will improve your cardiac ability. It'll build up that aerobic base that everybody talks about, and that is an important thing to do. A lot of people get put off by the fact that they don't enjoy going for a jog, they don't enjoy going on the treadmill or the recumbent bike or anything like that. So there are things though that you can do. You can do technical work and still get your heart rate up and still be doing your cardiac style work without necessarily having to do high intensity stuff and without necessarily having to go for a long run, unless that's the kind of thing that you enjoy doing.
Very good. Minute. Perfect.
You're a jogger though, aren't you, Gareth? You like a bit of a...
Yeah, I love it, mate. I went out this morning. Fantastic.
It's a bit meditative for some people. Is that you like to sort of clear your mind in that way, using a...
I just stick an audio book on, mate. So it's my learning time, really, rather than it being specifically about me running, which is great, but it's not, it doesn't massively get me going unless there's something that I'm picking up along the way. So yeah, it's my audio book time of day. But I also do enjoy, I do a lot of spin sessions and on turbo trainer, where I do some of the high intensity stuff as well to mix it up a bit.
Oh, there's different strokes for different folks, and you got to do your different things. I've always been very anti jogging because I hate it so much. I've done it in my time, but I just cannot stand it. It's just horrible, and I always end up with dicky knees and my Achilles heels. Are both hanging off anyway, so any excuse to get out of going for a jog, and I'll take it. find something more interesting to do. That's my thing. Okay, that's the end of the show for another week. Before we go, Gareth, you've got a little bit more work to do, and that is to give away the prize, which is this week an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy and pitchvision.com, same as we do every week. So the competitors are Regan and his question about a big vertical jump, and Ramon and his question about batting left-handed after 21 years of right-handed batting. Which did you prefer?
I love the story of Ramon, but this week I'm going to go with Regan's one, because it's something that I have to deal with regularly in my coaching, not just at school but around the world. And I think the more awareness we have about how to try and limit the vertical jump will only help bowlers' health and bowlers' performance. So, really excited by that question, and thank you for asking it.
Thank you, Regan. And there's some fast bowling courses that you can have a look at and decide which one you want to get some advice from. Ian Pont, there's Andy Caddick, there's Nathan Bracken, there's lots of exciting names there. Now, Gareth, if someone wanted to send in their question, have it answered on the show, and also get their chance to win a prize, how would they get in touch with us?
Well, you could give us a call on 0208 816 7691 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed. And also, you can get us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And it's there's lots of lively discussion going on across the social media at the moment. The Facebook page is always busy. We've got a lot of discussion going on around the world of spin bowling at the moment on the Pitch Vision Academy page. So there's definitely plenty going on if you want to spend another 15 minutes of your 5-minute coffee break having a look on the internet. If you want to listen to this show every week, and why wouldn't you? Well, maybe when you're going for that jog, you can listen to the show. Then you can subscribe to the show in iTunes. Just go over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us there. Click the subscribe button. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you can use anything else you like. We're pretty flexible people. Just go over to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link and you can use the feed to chuck that into whatever you want. My my favourite way to listen to podcasts is called Dog Catcher with 2 G's. So that's a little insight into my life, just like you had a little insight into Gareth's this week and his audiobook jogging. That's all this week. So until next time, see you next week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.